originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat He's Had Enough.
Raji Barajabort crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I'd like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 201, and also to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. So a portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you are able to help, please visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest tonight, he's the all-time leading rider at the Old Miles Park and the Old Raceway Park in Toledo, Ohio. He was also leading rider at Ellis Park 3 times. He was the oldest jockey to win a race at Ellis in 2004 at the age of 61. Throughout his career, he's lost 40,000 pounds sitting in the hot box. He's broken 65 bones and he's now 75 years old. With over 2,300 wins, it is a pleasure to introduce jockey R.A. Cowboy Jones. Cowboy Jones, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, America. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
I can't wait to spend the next hour with you, Cowboy Jones. I feel like we're going to need about 3 or 4 hours to hear all of your stories here. And when I talked to you on the phone the other day to get you lined up here for this show, I found it funny because we actually grew up in the same part of the world. You're from Southern Illinois.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell us, what was it like growing up? What was it, Heron, Illinois?
Yeah, I was Heron, Illinois. Yes, it was, we lived a normal life, you know. We went to school in the morning and we played ball when we got out of school. And we was at supper time at 6 o'clock and went to bed and started again the next day.
You mentioned play ball. Your brother, yes, actually, he went on to pursue that as a profession.
Yes, he was the fourth winningest college coach in the United States. He's recently retired about six years ago. And still he keeps up with the college baseball and just keeps that up and then gives speeches all the time all over the country about baseball, and he sent a lot of players to the big leagues, you know, that were in college with him when he was coach.
Your parents have to be pretty proud. You both turned out famous.
We are. You know what? We're very, very close, my brother. And we have close family. Of course, we're the only family left, just he and I. But we talked to each other almost every night when the ball game's over, and the Cardinal ball game for Cincinnati. And I'm a Cardinals Cincinnati fan too, and actually, when you're from Illinois, you've got to be a Cub fan. And
yes, sir.
The program.
Yes, sir. And you guys, I'm assuming you were thick as thieves growing up then.
Well, no, not so. He was played ball, and I rode horses. We just went just exactly in opposite directions. A neighbor boy, when I started riding horses, to have a horse, a neighbor boy had a pony. His parents bought him a pony and asked my mom and dad, said, if I save my money on my paper out, can I buy a horse? Oh, no, Robert, you won't take care of him. You don't have any place to keep him, and you live in town. And this, and I whined and cried around it for about a year. So finally I said, okay, you save your money, and we'll let you buy a horse. Well, my brother mowed lawns, and I delivered newspapers, and we saved up $765 to buy my first horse. And by the way, the horse had an Italian name. His name was Luigi. And so, you know, it come from a kind of a prominent Italian town here in Illinois. Is predominantly Italians, but about probably 70%. But it's a nice town. Just not a great deal of excitement and everything, but everybody goes to their ball games, and you know all your neighbors, and they always help you out. I used to deliver papers on horseback, and I'd wind up throwing the papers on top of people's porches and stuff, and my horses would mess on their yards as I was going through yards. And it was in town anyway, but everybody kind of overlooked my bad habits.
You have a book out, Cowboy Jones. It's called The Legendary R.A. Cowboy Jones, over 50 years as a jockey. And in that book, I read a funny story about when you first acquired Luigi, your horse, and you had to be pretty young when you first bought him. And was he a...
Yeah, I was 13.
Yeah, so was he pretty tame, or was he a little bit wild when you first got him?
No, he was... I was wild. He wasn't so bad, but he was... My mother would take me to West Frankfort, Illinois, and I'd pay $1 an hour to ride the horses and those trail rides that they had. And you know, those type of horses, you know, they're not going to do anything wrong. I mean, you have to kick and gouge them to make them run and do everything you can to get them to get out of a trot. And anyway, I'd save my money for the horse. So now we go to this horse trader in a little town called Energy, Illinois. And his name was Hog Cleaner, the horse trader was. And so we'd save up our $75, and we told him, man, I want to buy one of those horses out there. And they were at a big pen. And they get to put the saddle on him and everything, and I get on him. Well, so used to riding at those trail riding things, at those riding stables, those horses aren't going to do anything wrong. Well, I thought all horses were the same. I didn't know anything about the horses taking off or anything without kicking and gouging. I got on the horse, and the first thing I did was go, yeah! And I kicked that horse in the side, and he took off running me. It's the fastest ride I ever went in my life, I think. I went through the neighbor's backyard. I tore down clotheslines, gardens, and everything else, and before I ever got him stopped. And so I came back, and my mother was there, too. And my parents didn't know anything about the horse. And so I came back, and you know, we caught the horse. You know, I got off of him. And said, oh, Mom, I've got to have this horse. He's got spirit. Well, it's not that he had spirit. He just had a dummy on his back riding him. But that was the start off of the beginning of the Cowboy Jones. Me and that horse stayed together for a year or so, and then I traded another and got another one. And then the guy where I bought the horse, my brother, growing up, had broken his leg. And my cousin, Albert Saliba, my brother kept scratching his calf. And so he called him Itchy. And so the name Scratchy came along. And so I was riding with those riding clubs and stuff and out in the country. And the guy at the horse trader, when I bought the horse, he called me Scratchy and everything. So anyway, the horsemen and the horse riding horse people and I got the name Scratchy, Itchy and Scratchy as we grew up, and he played the ball, and I rode the horses.
Scratchy and Itchy. You have a couple interesting nicknames here, Cowboy Jones.
Yeah, I know it, yeah. and he's still Itchy Jones. I mean, if you could pick up any sports magazine that has baseball, college baseball, or anything, just pick up a newspaper, and you'll hear of Itchy Jones, and I'm quite proud of that. And then around the racehorse field at Ellis Park sometime, I'll hear somebody holler in the top of the grandstand, and I'll be on the race hack and holler, come on, Scratchy. And I know they came from Herron, Illinois. That's the one place they came from for sure, was Herron, Illinois. And they had to be the guys I was riding horses with in southern Illinois at the time.
I love it. Now, Southern Illinois, obviously there are some county fairs around there. Would you ever go and ride at the county fairs?
Oh, yeah. That's really pretty much where I started out. And I learned a lot of county fairs because I was riding with some real outlaws back then. But I was 15 years old. When I first rode my first race, I didn't know how to tie up my bridle reins. I was loose. I was winning races there and then. But now I'll tell you a little story about when I went from there. I taught my mom and dad to let me quit school. So I go to South Dakota with Lynn Wolver. They had horses, and I was getting on the horses at Marion, Illinois, at a fair. And they had a lot of fairs in Southern Illinois. And there would be a different fair every week, and they had horse racing back then at all those fairs. That's where I learned to ride, they had some old pros. They had some guys that had rode at the races that were ruled off. I mean, one was a really good rider, a fellow called Charlie Bright, but she's deceased now, and Gerald DeLong and all of them. And just like when I was on my way into business, like when Seabiscuit and that came out and all that, I read the book. And when they were going out of the business, I was coming into the business. So I knew those people, a lot of them by name only. But it was quite an experience, and that's where I got to riding at the fairs. And then anyway, that's what it was. I lost my train of thought there for a minute. I went to South Dakota and said, well, they couldn't find anybody to go to Park Jefferson, South Dakota to ride. And that was in 1959. And it was a recognized racetrack. And so we'd go out there, and we had two stops before we went to the races there. We went to Fort Pierce, South Dakota. Now, when you go to Fort Pierce, South Dakota, as you come into town, there's a big sign, Fort Pierce, home of Casey Tibbs. Well, he was a famous bucking horse rider. And everything was Casey Tibbs there in Fort Pierce, South Dakota. And then I went to Aberdeen, South Dakota, just a little farther down in the state. And, well, I was leading rider at both of those places because the horses we took out were that much the best horse. And all I had to do pretty much was hang on. Now I go to Park Jefferson. The meeting's over. Now, and this is a pretty good story right here. Now, this is the first race of the meeting at Park Jefferson, South Dakota, in 1959. It was the first race of the meeting there. It was the first time I had ever ridden on a recognized racetrack. It was the first race of the meeting. The horse was a favorite. He was in front all the way, and he won by a length. So I won the very first race I rode in my whole life in 1959 in Park Jefferson, South Dakota. So now I'm winning a race or two there, and this is the flattering part of it. They got this kid coming in from Southern Illinois. He's hotter than a pistol. He's going to be a world beater and this and that. And I thought, isn't this something? And I hear about all these stories later. Oh, yeah, they got this kid coming in from Southern Illinois. Can he ride? But I was on so much of the best horse. So it goes to show you the best horse will carry you around to the winner's circle.
Hotter than a pistol. Love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would say, oh, this kid came from Southern. Well, I was winning all the races. Those horses, they weren't very good. The ones I was beating, because the ones I was on, you could bought them for $400 or $500, I'm sure.
Now, I remember you telling me on the phone earlier that it was at Park Jefferson where you maybe cut off Keith Asmussen a little bit.
Well,
he didn't like that too much.
Well, that was that's my claim to fame with the Asmussen family. Keith, their daddy. Well, I was at Park Jefferson, South Dakota, and it might have been that race. I don't know. But I think it was a different one, but it was pretty close to the first one with me because I knew nothing. Well, anyway, we got back to the jock's room, and a little bitty jock's room. It wasn't much bigger than your bathroom. And we had changed words, which back then they did a lot of cussing. And he said, I'll bet 50 I can kick your, you know, what's he? And I said, well, I'll call it 50 blankety blank. And so anyway, we'd go out to eat that night. Now, when I won a race, I'd always call my mom and dad and tell them, you know, I'd won a race. So now I'm in the, and so Keith's mom and dad came in. That would be Steve's grandmother and grandfather, Steve, he's a famous trainer. And anyway, I went down to the corner by the restaurant, and I called up my mom and dad and that. And so anyway, I'm waiting for the operator, you know, to get him on the phone. And I hear a knock, knock, knock on that phone booth door. Well, there's only one way out of the phone booth. Well, I had to come out the one way that there was to come out, and I come out swinging. Well, I wind up hit Keith, and I wind up broke my knuckle and everything, and had to go to the doctor that night and get something done to put a pin in it. But then as the years went on, Keith was still riding. As the years went on, Steve brought a stable of horses into Ellis Park Racetrack. And I was very popular at the time, and I was quite successful at the time. And so I went out to the paddock. I was on a horse in that race, but he was standing in the middle of the paddock, you know, where the trainers stand and do the paddock right there. So I walked up to him, and I said, Steve, ask your dad. I introduced myself. I asked your dad if he's ever been to fight in a phone booth. And apparently, Keith must have forgotten about it, because I asked him a few years ago, and he said no. He brought it up to his dad, and he said, no, I don't remember that. So as the age went by, I guess that's what went in your memory. But he can't remember the fight in the phone booth. But I'll never forget it as long as I live.
You don't forget it.
No.
Was that first of many broken bones, as I mentioned in the introduction?
Yes.
65.
That was the first. I guess that was the first one. the rest of them happened in horse races. They weren't fights.
So you didn't get into too many fights then in the jocks room?
Well, yes. Now, I was a tall, skinny kid. I'm not now, but I was. In fact, now I look like a jockey. Back then, I looked like a basketball player. But anyway, I was kind of loose. And I didn't pick up my bridle reins too much. I didn't do too much guiding, but I was winning races, and I'd just cross over and shut the riders off. Even at Ellis Park, things were so much different back then. We'd come back if something bumping and all that. We'd come back cussing and swinging and everything. But now, these young boys, jockeys and jockettes, they're the most polite young ladies and gentlemen you ever want to see. I was in the jocks room just a week or so ago, and I'm watching the race, and bumping goes on. They take a number down. I come back to the jocks room. Well, I was already in the jocks room, and come back, and that jock went up to that girl and said, apologized for getting bumped. I said, apologize? I said, I don't belong here. I said, we didn't do any apologizing back then, and we'd be swinging somebody or cussing out. But they were so nice and polite. I said, I would expect to see all the jocks and jockettes in the very first row at choir practice in Sunday school on Sunday. I mean, that's just how much difference there is.
Cowboy Jones joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Cowboy Jones, as I was mentioning, 65 broken bones. Mm-hmm. And
I've had six broken legs.
Six broken legs?
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's expensive.
It's crazy.
You miss a lot of winters, because when you break a leg, it's pretty much automatic 6 months.
Wow. And you never thought twice about coming back then?
What?
You never had any doubt of ever returning to the saddle. Even after bad injuries, you never thought about it.
Never entered my mind. Every time I'd break a bone, I'd say, well, that won't happen again. That's over with. It's over done with now. You go along, and just like I tell people now, I say, you know, if you ride races long enough, sooner or later, you're going to break a bone. Something's going to happen. But good Lord took good care of me. I say, I walked away from 65 broken bones. I get along fine now. I still gallop horses, and it's just my entertainment. I look forward to getting home and going out and visit. Now, one of my hobbies, or if you want to call it a hobby, or entertainment's a better word for it. They race like 3 days a week here at Ellis Park now, and I've been semi-retired for a year or two. But anyway, I go out on Sunday and Saturday, and I go to the grandstand and visit with everybody and get my picture made 100 times with people and with their kids and their wives and their girlfriends and each other and visit with them they all get to meet Cowboy Jones. I could see when somebody will look at me and say, they would like to meet me. And I'm just glad to go over the table and say, well, are y'all doing any good? You win any races? And they'd say, well, no. I said, well, you didn't come here to lose. You're supposed to come here to win. But we'd visit with everybody, and they look forward to seeing me when I come out to the racetrack on the weekdays, weekends. And I enjoy it. They're my fans, and they have been. Just like I tell them, he was talking about Cowboy Jones when he retired and all that stuff. I said, well, when Cowboy Jones goes, so go the Cowboys. That'll be the end of an era. For one thing, I've outlived 75% of my fans. Wow. Almost 100% of my clients, which would be my trainers and owners. And the jockeys I ride with. I mean, I've got a list of people. I write down their names every year when somebody just gets deceased, and I have several pages of riders and trainers, and they're in heaven now, and they're not around anymore. I mean, pretty much when I go to, I've got picture albums in my house, and you can turn page after page, and the only person living is the guy on top of the horse. And I said, if I ever look at one of those pictures and I don't see my name on that top of that horse, I'll get something to worry about. But that's pretty much, I've outlived the whole world.
And you mentioned you're still galloping horses now.
Yeah.
75 years old, still galloping. I love that.
I do too. I do too.
I guess you do. You still go out there and do it every morning.
Yeah. And, now the thing about it is, the people I visit with and everything, they're the children and grandkids of the people I was riding for. And I talk about their dads. It's like the Beasley boy, Don Beasley was his dad's name. And I won 5 races on a horse called Our President. And that's back in the 60s. And see, these kids weren't even born then, or they were just babies when I first started riding. And there's not, like I say, my fans are all gone, and my clients are all pretty much gone. And now this is a younger boy. I went to the jock's room yesterday, and young boys and girls in there, and men and gentlemen and ladies and gentlemen, put it that way. And I knew Calvin Burrell and James Graham. I remember when he first came around, started riding. He was a dandy, and Martin Gedrin and the fellows, they're not now around anymore, training or quit. But they had an article years ago. The lifespan of a jockey is only 7 years. They either get big, they quit riding, they get tired of riding, they get hurt, and go on to a different business. And very few. And so I've outlived everybody 3 times over, and because usually their period is about 7 years.
Well, you've ridden
overall average.
You've ridden over the past 7 decades, so you've got to be pretty good.
Yeah, I need to win one more.
One more.
And I need to win one more, and I'm tied. I won a race in 6 decades. And guess, I'm tied with some pretty good company, a fellow called Bill Shoemaker. He's won a race in 6 decades.
Wow.
If I win one more, that'll be the 7 decades that I will have won a race. And I've ridden horses for the O'Keefe Circus for 30 years. And they have a horse for me every year, and I'll rider. They've had me in places I would never have gone. The Iowa, I've been and rode a horse in Iowa. I've been to Kansas and rode a horse, and somewhere else and rode a horse. And I've got a picture of me on an elephant. I look pretty good. I mean, I've got my silks and the colors and everything in the saddle, and here I'm on this elephant. And I said, well, I guess that's what's going to come to. I'll have to wind up riding elephants before it's over with. But I always had to reduce, and now I don't have to reduce. Now I look like a jockey and got no horses to ride.
Well, you still got to get that one winner, Cowboy Jones.
And we're trying to get one lined up. I've watched him, a boy from Southern Illinois. In fact, his dad started me out right. His dad and his neighbors, they had the horses in a little town called Creole Springs, Illinois. And I'm talking the little towns. But they had a few racehorse horses come out there, and they had one horse in particular. I broke him. I broke his maiden. I rode him all of his life. I won 61 races on him at the county fairs and at the races, and his name was Busy Gold. He was by nothing, out of nothing. He was by a horse called Gold Hunter, and I guess the only horses he'd breed was that mare, and they had him and a couple of other ones. There's a good story right here. It's almost unbelievable. I won 3 races on this horse in 24 hours. I rode him that afternoon, that morning, in Benton, Illinois. That's the county fair. Now, the next day, the next morning, we drove to Champaign, Illinois, at the county fair there, and I went on him there, and we drove back to Benton, and they had raced him that night, and I won 3 races on him in 24 hours, and he was shinbucked, which a lot of people don't know what shinbuck is, but a racehorse person would. He was shinbucked so bad that he looked like he was bowed in front. And that's very, very painful, sore shins for a horse. And it didn't bother him. He ran through the pain.
Wow.
That was my favorite horse. I've got a big, nice picture of him at my house. And it's Busy Gold. And I've got this one album of just him and articles about me and Busy Gold. Now, he came from Creole Springs, Illinois. And this boy's neighbor and him, they brought me out in 1959.
Three races.
But I did ride for him a little bit in the fairs in 1958.
3 races in 24 hours. I'm assuming you were both pretty tired after all that.
You thought he'd be tired. He just never gave it up.
Never gave up.
And it wasn't a very attractive horse. He wasn't like a super duper horse. You look at him, he was kind of a homely looking little thing. But that's God's truth right there.
We'll continue our visit with Cowboy Jones after this short commercial break, folks. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accepts the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanent Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PDJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly directly to these brave men and women.
They use the monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Penna of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcotte. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too, and I thank you.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm your host, Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by Cowboy Jones. And we were just talking during the break there, Cowboy Jones. You were talking to me about your experience on My Kentucky Breeze.
Yes.
And where you were the favorite that day, and you were going for the record that day to become the oldest jockey
yes.
To ever win a race. So tell us about that story.
Well, I Ben Wessels called me from Chicago, and he said, Cowboy, will you come ride this horse for me? And he said... he said she's been 4 seconds in a row, and he said that she just every time she runs, it looks like she's sitting on a win. And I said, yeah, that would be great. He said, and then he said, then you can make history. I said, okay. So I went down there. So and when I went to the jocks room, and then the world talk about flattering stirs. One fellow, he was from the east. He'd wanted to meet me, and so I met with the Sturts, and I knew the one I'd rode with. Was a paddock judge with him, and he was at Balmoral one time, and he was a jocks agent. And so I just wasn't that I didn't know him, and I knew him, and then they fell, and were glad that I came up to ride. And I said, yeah, I come, and I said, well, I came up with the intention to win. And I told him, Joe, I said, I didn't come up here for no reason. I mean, you don't go fly all over the countryside or drive all over the countryside to get beat. I said, my intentions when I told him, I said, I'd come here to win this race. And it looked like I almost had to win it. I mean, this horse just second. And then the horses that were in the race, that were in there with him, he'd done beat them all. He done beat them all these other horses. They never got near it. And so this time it was a perfect run race. And I rode, you can very seldom say that, but I rode a perfect race. I laid third. I waited and waited and waited and got down to fourth turn. By that time, those horses were done to give out. And so the hole opened up, and I go through it, and I open up, and then I look over my shoulder and down the outside fence. I've seen this horse coming, jump by jump by jump, inch by inch by inch. I knew he was going to catch me, and he did. And I'm still chasing Rainbow, still trying to get that wind back somehow. And I'm running out of time. I'm running out of years.
You'll get there. You'll get there, Cowboy Jones. Now tell me, the stewards weren't too happy with the other jocks in the race that day.
Yeah, and you know, well, if you look at the race, you would think, because there's two horses in front, all right, they run themselves to death. All right, they get tired. So I go through. I haven't got plenty of horses. I'm only in third. I haven't used up any horse. Okay, now, then the horse... And then what got the boy that finished third is the one that they gave the days to. And he was running head and head all the way. And then, but they didn't say anything about the boy coming down the outside fence. Well, he was just rolled by us all because we were all on dead horses except me. And then when I did use my horse up, that's all she's going to have from there to the wire. And that was it. And he just outrun me. It was just that simple. And I told the stewards there, and I've seen them on different occasions, and they'd watch it all over the country. About because it came out all over the well, you'd have thought it was a big deal. I mean, we're talking about a $1,500 race or $2,000, whatever the bottom was at Fairmount Park. And we're not talking about good horses. And maybe it was those cheaper horses, they'll outrun each other time after time. They beat each other. And I told that boy, I said, I'll back you up 100%. Because they were riding. They were, you know. But you can only ride so far so fast, and those horses weren't going anywhere. I could probably jump off and outrun my foot myself.
Well, let's talk about your last winner, Jarrett, for Larry Jones.
Yeah.
You remember that day?
Yes, I do. Cousin Larry, and we call him, we said our cousins, which are we're no kin. he put me on this horse, Jarrett, and he'd run close, we just went to the run and just widened on him, and that was, and then it was a big crowd in the winner's circle. I mean, it covered the whole racetrack, and then, now that was for, 5,000, and take him to Keeneland, and I ride him Keeneland, they run him, they got him in for 10,000, and I lead second bet, and I made the lead, and I got in the, and I got caught right down on the money for the 10,000, and Ramsey's claimed the horse off of him as my one live horse to keep on riding for the rest of the year. But I had to win, and then I got that second at Keeneland and thought I was going to win it. And Ramsey's claimed the horse off of Larry Jones, and I don't remember if the horse won another race or not. I think he might have, but I don't know, not soon after. And not for the 10th, and dropping back down.
Well, you got another one coming soon. I feel it coming, yeah. Cowboy Jones. I feel it coming. Now, I want to ask you a very important question now.
All right.
A question a lot of people probably wonder, and that is, how did you get the nickname Cowboy?
Well, they had I was one of the leading riders at Ellis Park, about fifth leading rider at the time. And Chick Anderson was the announcer. He announced the Derby, and that, he was a famous racehorse announcer. And so, he had his own television show, WEHT TV, in Henderson, Kentucky. And so he had picked the top five riders, and one each night would go and be on his television show. So, like I said, I was about the fifth leading rider, and my day came up. So he looked me up and down. Like I say, I used to be 5'9", and he looked me up and down, and I looked like a tall beanpole. And he said, "Now, Jones, it don't like you're going to have a lifetime in the saddle." He said, "What would you like to do when you have to quit riding or you retire, decide to?" I said, "Well, I'd like to go to school and take up IBM machines or demonstrate electric typewriters, because I was a speedball typist. I could make one thing in high school." And I said, "But this is a joke, and we're on the show." And I said, "But really, I always wanted to be a cowboy." And I just thought that was funny. And so the next year, I went a race opening day. Well, I'm not paying attention. I'm just tickled to death. I want a race. And so the next day, I went a race. And people said, "You have to go by that fence right there at Ellis Park Racetrack to get back to your parking lot, to your car." And it would say, "Hey, cowboy. Congratulations." And I'd look around. I didn't know there's people talking, and I looked around and they were looking at me. And then so the next day I won a race, and "Hey, cowboy, you had a good day." And there's still different people. So then the next day, and I was leading rider that year, the next day I won a couple and chicken down for the PA system, and now in the winner's circle, "All right, Cowboy Jones, we're riding double." And on Saturdays, he would come in the jock's room before he went up to announce the races. And so he was in there, and he came by my locker there, and I just got out of the sweat box, and I still had sweat all over the place, so I didn't get dried off. And I said, "Chick, where in the world did you come up with this Cowboy Jones bit at?" "Well, he said on television last year that you want to be a cowboy." And he invented Cowboy Jones, and it stuck with me like glue. And from that day on, everything I bought from that day on, I'd buy clothes, Western clothes, advertisements. I said, "The only difference between me and a real cowboy, they come from out west, and I came from a local Walgreens." And but I played the part as best I knew how. And I said, "I was growing up." I said, "I grew up as Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, and my brother grew up as Andy Koufax, one of the big famous baseball players." I said, "We all went our separate ways, and we all had a lot of fun."
Cowboy Jones joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So besides, obviously, your successful riding career, you're also a very successful tomato farmer. And I want to hear more about that. You still grow tomatoes?
Yes. Well, I'll tell you what. I was in Chicago. My wife was and I were there. And so I got done riding at Sportsman Park. And I just won the Illinois Derby trial on the horse that was going to run in the Derby. They didn't. They ran in the Illinois Derby. A horse called Mike's Red for J.D. Michaels from Northern Illinois, up around Champaign, Bloomington, I think. And anyway, I had a pocket full of money, and I had to add a big, nice car then to those. And anyway, I had my wife, I said, honey, stop by this fruit stand here, and I'll get some tomatoes. And so I went and got the tomatoes up there, and the guy said, it'll be, I think I got three. He said, it'll be $3. I said, what? He said, $3. I said, $1 a piece for a tomato? And he said, yes, sir. And I said, here, take your tomatoes back. And I told my wife, I said, honey, that's just it. I quit right now because I'm going to raise tomatoes. If they can get $1 for a tomato, I'm going to quit riding and go raise tomatoes. So I didn't know a thing about tomatoes, but there's not a whole lot to read. I read every book, everything you could think about a tomato. I've still got stacks of books about tomatoes in my house. And I was out there and I was pruning those things and growing by seed and everything. And anyway, I planted these tomatoes. I got to deal with the produce man, and he knew me. And so I could furnish him with tomatoes. So, boy, I didn't know whole much about tomatoes either, but I learned them pretty fast when it gets in your billfold. So anyway, I take this big, nice load of tomatoes up to him. Boy, they were just as pretty red and ripe as you could be. And he gave them there, and I was getting 35 cents a pound for them. And anyway, he calls me, and he said, Cowboy, he said, all those tomatoes you brought over, he said, they're all rotten. Oh, my heart. Oh, I just couldn't believe it. They were the prettiest tomatoes I'd ever seen in my life, and I picked them, every one of them. They're just beautiful. And so I went, well, what's wrong? He said, Cowboy, he said, you can't bring these things in ripe. He said, they're in the thing, building here, and then they get shipped around. And he said, bring them about half green, just a little bit of pink on them. And then by the time they get to the stores, they'll be red. And sure enough, now that cost me about $100 because I had about $100 worth of tomatoes on that truck. And I learned that lesson pretty quick. And then I knew how to start picking those tomatoes. And I guaranteed every tomato went in the box. Anybody I sold a tomato to, I said, if it's not the best, I'll replace it. And I told her, in fact, I ate my business card. You're going to love this. Jones is my name and tomatoes is my game. And so that was my slogan. But, I'd pick those potatoes. I'd gallop horses in the morning and 8 or 10 horses. And couldn't lose 5 pounds, and then ride all afternoon and go home and pick and prune and pick weeds and tomatoes and can it. I'd can, one year I can 1,300 quarts of something, whether tomatoes or cucumbers or whatever it might have been. And I really enjoyed it.
Well, you had the second largest tomato business in Western Kentucky.
Yeah, I was the second largest tomato grower in Western Kentucky.
Pretty impressive. I'd say that.
I like that part. I like Jones is my name and tomatoes is my game.
Well, you also worked in insurance.
Yeah. I was the leading insurance salesman, and it's really good, and it still is. And not that I'm in the insurance business, but years ago, a man came out. His name was A.L. Williams. And I went to one of those meetings, and his concept was buy term, inexpensive term insurance, and invest the difference of what you get with a whole life insurance policy or a paid-out policy or down the plan yet. And it makes sense. So you buy this insurance, it's going to cost you $3. And if you buy the whole life insurance where you're supposed to get a savings or something, that's going to cost you $10, which leaves you $7 left over. Well, you can take that $7 and you can invest it, and you'll have more money putting in a shoebox than you will with that insurance policy. And that was the truth. And right. I still swear by it. And if you're going to buy insurance, now that this is on television, and I'm like I say, I'm not an insurance seller. You go to any insurance man and ask him, what's the most inexpensive insurance you can get? You're talking about death benefit, and he'll say term insurance. And any of the other stuff, you can save it in a different way. There's different savings products out there than through an insurance company. That's probably your biggest waste of money you're ever going to spend.
Wow, and you're really trying to focus.
And that came up for the cowboy, too. Say whatever they want. Because you know what? They can still look me right in the face, and they said, they know I'm right. That's one thing. I knew I'm right, and they know it. But they make so much more money selling the whole life insurance and the different ones that come up with a savings program of some sort. You can save that money yourself if you have the willpower.
And you tried to specialize on, focus on helping the racetrackers with certain types of insurance as well.
I said that. In fact, I might have made a couple of millionaires of some of the leading trainers out there. I had them all set up with individual retirement accounts. It's $166.66 a month. It comes at $2,000 in the year, tax-free, tax-deductible, until you get it out and compound interest. Do that, and you can show them right there on a piece of paper and the mortgage thing. But, I sold trainers, and Anthony Granitz is one of them. He's one of the leading trainers up there. I guess he still got his.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to have close to a million just off that, what I've sold, set him up with. And if you're going to have it, that's the kind of have. Because you're not there, and you don't want to insure a kid for a lot of money. You're not trying to get making a profit off of your children. Set them up with some kind of an endowment program or a savings program of some sort.
He wears many hats. Cowboy joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So I have a question for you now. I heard that when you would lose a race, you kind of had a temper.
Well, I didn't like to lose. I just get upset. I'd try. You know, they don't tell you about the times I'd get beat by a guy and come back to the drop room and sit there and cry. Because I got beat. And to come up with all that, it just upset me to get beat. Because the bad part about it was I thought I was supposed to win with everything. If I got on his back, he's supposed to win. And it don't work that way. And I'd come back and something happened, a horse race or something. At Miles Park, they had a window over one end of where my locker was. I'd come back through that front door, and I'd swing that skull cap, and I'd knock that window out. They'd get tired of replacing that window. I think they mopped it up. And, I'd sling the skull cap, and, that was very unruly, but it was just myself. I wasn't trying to hurt anybody else. It was just me, because I was upset. I just couldn't understand getting beat, especially if I thought I was on the best horse, which I always did. But, I mean, if there's a long shot, I thought, well, he's got a shot. He's out here.
How about when you would go out to the paddock on crutches, and you'd still ride?
Yeah, and they let me, and I won races, too. They didn't, held their breath. They didn't, Well, that was, you know, I don't know whether it was greed or what. It was just, I was just obsessed with winning. I figured if I could get on top of them, I could ride them.
Pretty impressive. I would tell you that. Or crazy,
like
one of the two.
You could call that pretty stupid.
Smart. Now, you mentioned a couple of times throughout the show about your height. You're very tall. You were very tall for a jock, and you were 5'9". And during the introduction, I mentioned that throughout the years, you've had to lose 40,000 pounds. That's an astronomical number. That's crazy. And so I'm sure you spent many long hours in the hot box, and I wish I would have talked to you when I was riding, because you figured out a trick.
Yeah.
When you would spend those hours in the hot box.
I knew how to lose weight, sweating it off and everything. I wasn't a heaven rider. I didn't regurgitate my food, no. But I did sweat mine off. And I'd put it on every night. I mean, I'd go to the drop room, and I'd weigh 117 pounds. Okay, road time I rode my first race, which is the first race, I'd weigh 112. And then I'd you put on my tack and everything I'd ride. And then that night, I would drink it all up. And And then the next day, sweat it right off in this clockwork. And I knew just exactly how long it took me. I usually spent about 2 hours a day in the sweat room. I lose about 5 pounds an hour. And in the time I cool off and everything, and it was a day, and that was the hardest part of the riding was the reducing. I mean, the riding was a piece of cake, and but the reducing made up, took all the fun out of the riding part, because, you know, you could never eat what you wanted to eat, and drink what you wanted to drink, and you'd go, you know, you'd see those kids in the jocks room, you know, eating a candy bar, ice cream bar of some sort, and you couldn't do that. You go out and eat, and all the food was just absolute. You taste the best you've ever eaten in your life. You thought so every meal, and then you knew when you got done eating, that's got to come off by tomorrow. I mean, you can only enjoy yourself while you're eating it, and then you're miserable till the next day till you get it all off again, and still go back and ride. And, you know, a rider like that, I was very, very dedicated to riding. And probably more so than anyone, because to me, at the time, that was the most important thing in my life. That was my main priority. And it's hard to give it up. You look up and you think, boy, the years went by. You don't, and they went by pretty fast. But I led a fast life too. And I think, how did I do the things I did? And you just listen to this. This is a pretty tough schedule. I get up in the morning. I gallop 8 or 10 horses. Okay, and I'd be done galloping by 10 o'clock in the morning. I go change clothes. I go back to the hot box, get there at 11 o'clock, lose my 5 pounds, go ride my 8 or 9 races, cool out, go out drinking and dance all night, every night, just about on the weekends for sure, and go back, go to bed, and get up in the morning and do the same thing again. I said, man, I had to be made of iron. But boy, there was you couldn't catch me with a net. I was just full of it all the time. Yeah, and I turned out to be a pretty good dancer too.
Really?
Oh yes. Yeah.
What about karaoke? I heard a rumor you could sing karaoke.
No, see, now I was on television. That I used to. Now people thought I could. In fact, this happened a year ago. My brother had his high school class reunion, the 50-something class reunion or something. He's 5 years older, and of course I knew all the kids that he grew up with. We were talking about here in Illinois, you know, and because I was in eighth grade and he was a senior. So, but then I knew them all, and they all played ball and everything. So anyway, I even on television, when I was about 14 or 15, I saw this guy named Johnny Ray, and so I bought the record Cry, and the White Cloud Cry, and so I practiced lip syncing. So in my I'd go to ladies' auxiliaries and I'd lip sync, you know, for different organizations and that in town. And I was 14 years old. And then as it got older, then I got on television. And so I'd lip sync those songs and cry and the White Crowd would cry. And I could play the part. I could cry the real tears, tear off the clothes, the whole nine yards. And so anyway, last year, They had this class reunion for my brother and all there. So they had a disc jockey. So I went up to the disc jockey. Nobody knew this was coming on. I went up to the disc jockey. I said, do you have Cry, and Little White Cloud Cried on that, Johnny Ray on your record player thing? And he said, yeah. I said, I can do that. And I said, just wait a while and then you come up and introduce me. I said, you won't be embarrassed, believe me. And so I used to do this on television all the time. So anyway, it's all 20 minutes or something go by and everything, and all the kids are out there. And it's now, ladies and gentlemen, we got a special guest here tonight of some sort. We have the great Johnny Ray. And so I stepped out there and the music started. Well, the best part about it, when it was over, everybody came up and complimented me and shaking my hand. They thought I was singing. I couldn't. They won't let me sing in the jocks room after the last race at Ellis Park. That's how bad I sang. But anyway, they thought I was singing doing the real deal. You know.
But you could. Sure. You could lip sync.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and I had fun, and I was good at it. Well, and I still do it.
We only have a couple minutes left here on the show, okay. Cowboy Jones. I want to ask you an important question, because to me, you are the perfect person to ask this question. How has racing changed throughout the years? What have you seen? What are the biggest things that's changed, and what's good and bad about that?
Well, I think it's a plus. You have these kids are a little more educated, and they've got their heads on straight, and they're pretty straight-laced boys and girls, and they're all Christians, pretty much so, and they go out there and they do their work, and they're very polite and very well-mannered. The only thing I can say that they did come up with, I think, the worst skull cap or helmet anybody ever put on top of their head. And I would, if it's up to me, I would quit riding before that, but I had just to hang on as much as good on account of helmets. The greatest helmet they ever had was a Caliante, and they talked about it wasn't safe. Hey, nothing's safe when you hit on your head anyway. I don't care whether it's a Caliante or this new helmet they've got, which I wouldn't give you 25 cents for one. And you know, but I've told everybody that too, and they don't like them either, but they're stuck with them. The racing commission or whoever had somebody got some money off that deal to have them to come up with that helmet, because I don't care for it at all. I wouldn't have one if they didn't have to ride. But now that I'm quitting riding, it don't make any difference. And these young kids don't know the difference now either, because okay, they came up with a new helmet instead of the ones that we rode with.
Does that sign still hang at the Ellis Park jocks room?
Yeah. They said it'd be there as long as there's a Cowboy Jones, as long as he's still living.
Signs up there. Signs still hangs. And we'll be looking for you in the entries, Cowboy Jones. You're still looking for that
I'm
one
still
winner.
Alive. I'm still alive on it.
Yes,
never
sir.
Know what's going to happen.
I love it. Well, Cowboy Jones, we are all out of time, but I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been a real pleasure.
I'm flattered. I appreciate it so very, very much. And to get to talk, it's like I feel like I'm talking to the public and people in the grandstand right now. I just feel like they're sitting up there and listening, and just like I was there and live.
Well, wishing you all the best, Cowboy Jones. Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website. That's www.horseracingradio.net. And while you're there, check out all of the other great shows you can find here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, like Trainer Talk, Equine Forum, Express Bet Radio, and many, many others. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal, and thank you for listening.